Hello, I'm Mariëtte Snyman. Welcome to Calm, Clear and Helpful, a weekly podcast series on taking good care of yourself and others, introducing you to wellness professionals ready to assist, inform and inspire. Today's topic is being a ways finder in a complex world. My guest is Sonia Blino, founder of More Beyond, speaking from Pretoria. Welcome, Sonia.
Hello, Mariëtte, and hello to all your listeners, and thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm very excited to hear what you're going to say today. And to our listeners, thanks for joining us. Sonia, you describe yourself as a complexity nerd, ways finder, artist, and scientist. Could you say a little more?
Yes, Mariëtte. I always, you know, I dread that question, you know, like, what do you do? Or because I tend to dabble. I do many things. But I think I'll start with a complexity nerd because that's probably what best defines me. And I started life as a meteorologist. I studied meteorology. And through a long and winding road, I've ended up working with people. And I think the link between the two is this idea of complexity. And for people who are not familiar with what that is, another way to describe it is the science of uncertainty. And so I firmly believe that the world is complex, and in that lies its beauty. You know, complexity is what makes life worth living, I believe. But also it comes with uncertainty, unpredictability, and things that tend to make us anxious. And that's where the ways finding comes from. You know, it's a lot of what I do is to help people and organizations shift from a way of being in the world where they're looking for existing maps and existing paths to follow to making the path as they walk. So becoming a ways finder. Yeah, that's, I guess, the best synopsis of what I do.
Mm. And artist?
Artist. I dabble a little bit with painting. And writing, I really enjoy writing, but I think my main form of artistic expression is photography. So for over a decade, I was a professional photographer, kind of on the side, mostly specializing in portraits and weddings. But at some stage, you know, you get to a point where you know a season of your life has come to an end, and that happened. Mm. But I still, you know, when you will never find me without the camera. I love capturing, I guess, the beauty in the complex world.
Yeah, and I must say that as to writing, I so enjoy your posts on LinkedIn because they have a poetic quality to them, you know, apart from the wisdom that you capture there.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. In the last few years, I suppose after COVID, you know, I've always been fascinated by the theoretical aspects of complexity. But after COVID, it's as if I find more wisdom in poetry than in theory. And so I think that is also what's stimulating me to write in that way.
And Sonia, I know this is also a difficult question to provide a shortish answer to, but could you tell us about your work?
So my work has evolved over the years, but I think probably the best way to describe it, you know, as I've said, it's about helping people and teams, and I suppose if you extend it to organizations, become more comfortable with being uncomfortable. Mm. And so, you know, I sometimes help people become more resilient to change. So helping people and teams navigate transitions. You know, sometimes we hear the word change and we think of a change event, but there's always a process of transition afterwards. that we are not particularly good at navigating, because, you know, it involves loss and grieving what we can no longer, you know, access, what is over, and then going through this very messy in-between phase before we kind of start living into the new, into the, you know, whatever wants to emerge. So I do a lot of work in helping people and teams through transition. And then I work with leaders. So how do you lead in complexity? How do you lead when you don't have answers and you don't necessarily know exactly where you're going? And then I've started doing a lot of work recently on embodiment practices, because, you know, what I've seen is a lot of the tools and the approaches in complexity are very heady. You know, it's about trying to figure things out. Mm. And sometimes when we are in the fog, when we're in that really messy in-between tangles almost, you can't figure it out. You need to tap into your embodied wisdom, into your intuition. And this is quite new for me, Mariette. I think this is this is partly why I'm so passionate about it, because I used to live very much in my head. Mm. And at 50, I discovered my body is not only there to carry my head around and that there's actually wisdom in the body. And so a lot of my more recent work kind of combines the how do we make sense of complexity, and then how do we kind of embody that ways finding way of being in the world.
Oh, now I'm curious about that. And now I have to stick to what I planned for today.
You don't. I'm very happy to go with the flow with you.
Yeah, I like to get, you know, a basic idea of what it's about. So this is where my questions are going. Mm-hmm. On your website, More Beyond, you write that you believe we are in unprecedented times. And please, could you elaborate?
I'll give you, I'll start with a quote. There's actually two quotes that I really enjoy at the moment that I feel describes that. So one is Zach Stein, who says, we are in a time between worlds where the old is passing away and the new has not emerged yet. I paraphrase. And then there's Michael Mead. He calls himself a mythologist. And he says, to be alive in these times is to be in the liminal phase of a collective rite of passage. So those two quotes have really informed where I feel we are. And this unprecedented times, if you just look at the world today, you know, people would say things like, you know, we've been through wars. We've been through genocides, we've been through pandemics, so there's nothing really new. But we haven't really been in a world where we've got this instant, all-the-time connectivity that we have at the moment through social media and the internet. And we also have not been in a world with intelligent machines. And so it feels like almost like a perfect storm of change and multiple layered transitions, and it is creating extreme uncertainty and extreme unpredictability. And so many people experience this as extremely anxiety provoking, and, you know, every now and again I go there as well. You know, it's I almost find myself bracing in the morning for what news is going to come today. But also in that deep uncertainty, there is a lot of potential, a lot of possibility. And so I believe we're in uncharted territory. You know, I don't know if you ever watched Star Trek, but mm-hmm. this idea of going where no one has gone before, you know, like being in the frontier, that's where I believe we are. And that means that nobody's gone here before. There are no paths. There are no maps. And not even a GPS can help us. So we really need to embody what I believe is a essential human trait. You know, it's we are explorers. We have this ability to, and I guess the spirit also, that needs to discover new things, discover new worlds. And I believe that is the invitation.
And these times, these unpredictable and complex times, how do they influence us personally? You have touched on it a little. Would you like to say more?
I think what's starting to happen, you know, so when I first started working in this field of complexity, when I used the word or when I told people that you can't control everything and you can't predict everything, I got very deep frowns. Because even up to a decade or so ago, life still seemed fairly predictable. You know, we were aware that, you know, there were uncertainties around, but I think we could still maintain, I suppose, the belief that the world is fairly certain and predictable. Now that is no longer the case. So many people would say they feel as if there's no more solid ground. They feel unmoored. They are overwhelmed. There's just so much happening. And I think how it's impacting us personally is you know, we many people are talking about another pandemic that's unfolding at the moment that is a well-being or a mental health pandemic. We are stressed. We are overwhelmed. And what it's driving, I believe, also is, you know, more and more behavior like becoming addicted to our technology, trying to be to numb these anxieties. And so I think from a personal perspective, we don't necessarily always realize how much anxiety we are in. It's almost become normal. And so a lot of what I do also is to help people find different ways of expressing and articulating where they are. But I think mostly what these unprecedented times are doing to us personally is it's driving a huge amount of change. And it's not one change at a time. You know, I sometimes people use the analogy of caterpillars going, you know, becoming butterflies, you know, and caterpillars have the benefit of they're in one cocoon and becoming a butterfly is more or less biologically insured. Mm-hmm. We are in multiple cocoons at the same time. And that is what I believe the biggest personal impact is.
Yeah, that certainly resonates with me. And then the next question is, which effect do these times and this world have on our work lives?
So what I'm currently seeing with most of my clients, and I do, you know, most of my work is in corporate. It's similar to an extent, you know, there is a lot of change. So we're dealing with change in our personal lives, but then also at work as organizations try to adapt to this very complex and unpredictable external, you know, business context. There's also a lot of change happening in the business environment. Something else that I'm seeing a lot at work is the things that used to work, you know, so especially if you're in a senior position, the ways that we used to lead, the ways that we used to market, the ways we used to sell, all of these, let's call them best practices, many of them are not working as well anymore. And so we realize that what brought us here will not necessarily take us into the future, but we don't know what will. And so now we're forced to find new ways. And in many organizations, they've adopted a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude. You know, there's so much uncertainty in the world. We don't know, for example, what will happen with Trump's tariffs. We, you know, there's so many things that we don't know, that many organizations don't want to spend money. They've adopted this wait-and-see attitude. And what this has also done is, in many organizations, they're not hiring new people. And so there's more work and fewer people, which leads to a lot of pressure on people. And so we're kind of getting pressure from all sides at the moment, from all of this change coming at us in our personal lives, and then pressure from a work context.
Mm. Now, the reason I invited you today, Sonia, was one specific post on LinkedIn, which I read that you wrote shortly before Africa Burn. which started at the end of April this year. And may I quote from this post?
Yes, sure.
Going to the burn is edgy. It's an event that's deeply misunderstood by many, almost stigmatized. In some circles, you face instant judgment for going. It's physically uncomfortable being completely self-sufficient in the dusty heat of the desert. It's sensory overload. Colors, lights, music, an explosion of creative self-expression. There's no plan, no shops, and no connectivity. Just a week of being radically present with what's in front of you. Serendipity, emergence, aliveness. It's a deep dive into the unknown, an embrace of uncertainty, ambiguity, and entangled complexity. A place where what you do, what you know, and what you own doesn't matter. Here it is about connecting deeply as humans, not as roles. This isn't just a festival, it's a field of practice. I come to play, to experience, to stretch. I do this to remain congruent with my message, that complexity is life. And this post so intrigued me because you relate your experience of Africa Burn to life. Would you like to say more about that?
Yes, sure. Where to start? Maybe a good place to start, Mariette, would be, you know, why I started going to the burn, you know, despite the curiosity and, you know, hearing all the stories. I have a deep value for being congruent with my message and with my work. So if I tell people that you can't control everything and that you need to embrace the unknown and uncertainty, I need to be able to do it as well. And so I try to put myself into spaces where it's uncomfortable, where I can't predict, where I can't know, so that I can build those muscles. And so that's, you know, going to the burn is one way that I do that, because it really is a space where, you know, as I say in that post, you know, there's no plan, there's no shops. The way that you relate to others is completely different than in the, what they call the default world. But what I've realized about the burn and how it really is similar to life is we think to some extent that life is predictable. I'll just give you one example. We think that we have time. We think that we have time to follow our dreams, to say what needs to be said to a loved one, to make a career change, to rest even. And so we tend to put it off. We think that there's time. But at the burn, you realize that, you know, it's even though a week out there in the desert, very uncomfortable, can feel quite long, you realize that time goes by very quickly and that actually you don't have that much time. I wrote another post, I'm not sure if you saw it, but there's all these beautiful artworks in the desert. As I said in the post as well, it's this radical self-expression. So it really is, you know, quite awe-inspiring. And it's big, it's stretched out. And you see sometimes there on the horizon, there's something that looks interesting. But, you know, today you don't really feel like walking that far. And you think, I'll do that tomorrow. And then the next day when you look again, the artwork's no longer there. It's burned. And so this, I guess, the temporariness of life becomes extremely visceral at the burn. You realize that if you want to go and see an artwork, you must go and see it when you've got the chance, because tomorrow it might burn. So that's one way that it's very much like life. And then I think also just this continuous unfolding and serendipitous moments, serendipitous encounters, the moment you kind of step out of your need for a plan, that is when things come together in ways that you couldn't have planned, you couldn't have controlled, but that's almost magical. And I find that in life, when we let go of our expectations and we let go of the plans and the schedules, and we just become open to these serendipity and to almost like trust in the unknown, the same things happen. So, you know, the burn is like life in many ways, but I think the one that always gets me is just, you know, when you're sitting around those burns, when you watch these big artworks burn, you realize that, you know, nothing is forever. Not here on this planet. You know, it doesn't matter if you're everybody's favorite artwork, if it's the biggest artwork on the playa or the binnekring, as they call it in Africa burn, everything burns. So, you know, do what you follow your dreams. Tell the people that you love them. Live your life fully while you're here. I think that's probably the biggest message that I get from being at the burn.
Yeah, and a profound message. And then, Sonia, you often talk about being a ways finder. Could you tell us what that means? You have referred to it in passing.
Yes, yeah, so a few years ago, I got really curious about who the people or people groups are that are really, really good in uncertainty or in uncharted territory. And eventually where I ended up was looking at ancient wisdom traditions, specifically in some of the indigenous cultures around the world. And in particular, what fascinated me was the Polynesian wayfinders or navigators. And so I started really looking at what is it that these ancient cultures, what is it that they knew? How were they able to settle vast spaces? You know, if you think of, so the Polynesians, people regard them as the astronauts of their time. They settled, I think it's over 3 million square kilometers with no compass, no maps. They just essentially, you know, relied on their ability to relate and read patterns in nature and their spiritual practices to some extent to do that. And so ways finding, I put the S in there, because in complexity, there's never only a single way to find. You know, one of the things that I've realized is we've become very, socialized to see the world as complicated, not as complex. And now I know I need to explain that. Mm. But you must have heard about the so-called clockwork universe. It's this idea that the world or the universe is like a machine. And so it's predictable. An example of a complicated system would be a car engine. You know, I can take it apart. I can optimize the parts and put it back together again. It fits in predictable ways. Something that is complex is entangled and it's alive. So I can't take it apart. I need to work with the whole and the parts, and everything is connected to everything else. So ways finding, if something is complex, if I'm in, you know, I'll give you maybe the easiest way is an example. The other day, an example that emerged was to plan a wedding is complicated. To be married, to be in a marriage is complex. Mm. You have to continuously navigate the uncertainty, the entanglement. And in that context, there's not a single good way to find, to be married. There are multiple ways. And so I put the S in ways finding, kind of to break people out of this idea of there's a single good solution that I must find. and to stay in this way of being that is, I can trust that a path will unfold as I walk. And so ways finding is it's a methodology and an approach that I created that does exactly that. It helps people overcome the stuckness and the overwhelm that they sometimes face when they're in deep uncertainty. And it helps them take small steps and find their way into the future, into what wants to emerge, into the good marriage.
A quick note on what I do. I'm a content entrepreneur creating podcasts and articles on living a happier and healthier life by interviewing coaches, therapists, and other wellness experts from over the world. You'll find this content on my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za. And it's there to help you find just the right helping professional when you need one. The section Up Close and Personal on my website offers you a glimpse of the person behind many of the experts I feature. If you're a wellness expert keen on getting more in-person or online clients or creating worldwide awareness of an issue close to your heart, let's talk about co-creating a podcast or article, or perhaps featuring you in a South African magazine. You'll find more information under Services on my website. To each listener, no matter your age, occupation, or where you live, how about creating your very own personal audio recording with me as a one-of-a-kind gift to someone you deeply care for? In this private interview with me, you can share childhood memories with your children or grandchildren, record a bird's eye view of your career or business, or speak about an unforgettable trip. The possibilities are endless. To find out more, just click on Gift Podcasts on my website. Now, back to my guest. Before I ask my question, how do you offer this methodology? Is it only in corporate work or how does it work?
No, it's so there's several ways. So one is almost, you know, as individual coaching. So it's a framework that can serve as a scaffolding for us to think differently about, for example, the next season of our lives. You know, many of the people I work with are facing transitions. You know, so people coming up for retirement or potentially people who've been retrenched or women who are in menopause. Also, a friend of mine uses it with people who have been diagnosed with disease, you know, things like autoimmune disease. And so the idea with this is to give you a completely different way of looking at the uncertainty you're in and helping you identify what is a direction that feels alive to me. So this is not, you know, in complexity or in the deep unknown, we don't set goals. We just kind of determine what is a good direction. And then goals might become a little bit shorter term, but the key thing is that we know more or less where we want to go and then we start exploring. So I work with individuals in one-on-one ways to do that. And then I've got several processes that run online, virtual learning journeys. One is with a partner of mine, Miriam van Vliet, which is around embodied ways finding. So there we come together as a group and we essentially support each other in reconnecting to our intuition in finding our way together. You know, it's always easier to be a ways finder if you're not on your own, if you're part of a community. And then I do work with corporates. So I would work with teams. I'm currently working with a school leadership team as well, who have realized that they face a lot of complexity and the old ways of managing and leading is no longer working. And so then very often I would do a series of workshops. I would do leadership development, you know, like the typical learning environment. So it all just depends on who it is that I'm working with.
Thank you, Sonia. Now, I was going to ask you to speak about complexity and complexity fitness.
So complexity, I think I've already spoken about a little bit, but maybe I can go a little bit deeper and hopefully demystify it a little bit. So as an example, Mariette, this conversation is an example of complexity. Because you and I, we're not following a script. You don't know what I'm going to say. We are kind of responding to each other in real time. Mm-hmm. You know, and there's so many examples of complexity. I wrote a blog post a few years ago where I wrote, it's hard to survive in the jungle if you were trained in a zoo. And I find that still quite resonates. It just explains this difference between something that is ordered or complicated and something that is complex. And so the world, I think we can all recognize that we don't live in a world that's like a zoo. You know, it's some of our organizations are structured like that, but life doesn't work like that. You know, it's more unpredictable, but it's also more beautiful and alive. And so we believe that we need to become fit for that complexity. And when and fitness, you know, it's a bit of a play on words, but it's less the kind of fitness that we build, you know, when we go to the gym, and more the ecological term, you know, the way that a leopard, for example, is fit for its context. It's adapted to thrive in the bushveld, for example. So how can we adapt to thrive in complexity? That was the question that we were working with there. And so complexity fitness is a practice. It involves different ways of thinking about the world and different ways of relating to it. And then there are meta skills. So one of the things that we came up with is this acronym called COOL. So we talk about being cool in complexity. And some people feel it's a bit frivolous, but once you start going into it, it's quite layered. You know, like, for example, going back to the burn, you can't survive the burn if you're not cool. So it's an acronym, and the C stands for courage. So in a complexity fitness context, the courage to step out of the known, the courage to sit in the discomfort of not knowing and resisting that urge to just jump to an answer or a solution. If you're a leader, the courage to admit when you don't know. So it's not big acts of bravery. It's basically just letting go of these narratives that if you're competent, you're supposed to know where you're going. You're supposed to have answers. And so to become more fit for complexity means embracing that. Then the first O of COOL is openness. Openness to diverse perspectives. Openness to trying new things. Openness to being curious. You know, so it's all of those things also contributes to making us more fit for the jungle than for the zoo. The second O in COOL is observing. And this is slightly different. It's a verb. And so this is about observing the patterns around us. So if you think about it, Mariette, if I'm in a zoo, I don't need to be particularly aware because, you know, I'm in a very structured, ordered environment. If I'm an antelope in the zoo, the lions can't get to me, so I can be quite complacent. In the jungle, I can't. So how do we cultivate more awareness of what's going on around us? But then also, how do we observe and notice the patterns within us. So what is it that triggers me? When do I become anxious when I can't know, for example? And how do I regulate those nervous system responses? That is what observe is about. And then finally, the L is lightness. And sometimes I wish I could start with that, but then I wouldn't have my cool acronym. But lightness is about not taking ourselves too seriously. It's about holding our strong opinions lightly. And also it's about being playful, bringing humor back, for example, in the workplace. We underestimate the importance of play and imagination, especially when it comes to creativity. So in work context, we would use the language of play. I'd say, you know, I'm playing with the numbers or I'm playing with the strategy, but we don't really play. And so these, we call them meta skills, that's, you know, abbreviated with this acronym COOL. That is what we focus on when we go into organizations or we work with individuals to help them become more fit for complexity. And each of them have other things that hang on them, you know. So we go into things like curiosity, sense-making, you know, so skills that sit underneath these meta skills. But I think from a just describing what complexity fitness is, it's this ability to embody being cool when we find ourselves in discomfort and not knowing.
I see. And how does applied mindfulness practice relate to cool?
So applied mindfulness is really important for us to be able to actually practice being cool. And specifically, you know, what tends to happen, it rests in that second O, you know, the O of observe. Because sometimes when we are invited to show up with more courage or to show up with more openness, it can feel extremely uncomfortable and it can trigger our nervous system. So we can go into fight, flight, freeze. And applied mindfulness practice helps us manage our nervous system responses. So it helps us to not be as reactive, so to be responsive, so to respond with intention versus just reacting in a knee-jerk way. So all kinds of mindfulness practices really helps with this, you know, breath work. But just cultivating more awareness around our responses when we find ourselves in complexity, it's extremely important for us to be able to practice cool. Because if we are not able to manage those nervous system responses, we will not be able to show up with more courage, with more openness, or with playfulness. You know, in one of the corporate clients where we work in, someone said to me once, you know, we are just trying to survive. We're just trying to keep our heads above water. And now you're asking us to be curious.
Mm.
And so that is where, you know, mindfulness practice can really come in and just help with that.
Yeah. Sonia, where can listeners learn more about your work and follow you?
I'm active in many places, Mariette. Probably the easiest one is on LinkedIn. I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so just Sonia Blichmuth on LinkedIn. I am also on Instagram, but not as active. And then the two websites, so morebeyond.co.za and complexityfit.com. That would probably be the best places.
And your blog?
I blog on Medium. So if you search for Sonia Blichnote on Medium, you will be able to find me there.
Yeah. I'll attach the links to your websites to the podcast, and then the rest of the information I'll put in the podcast notes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
May I ask you a fun question?
Yes.
Good. If you could embody any aspect from nature that illustrates flow, Sonia, what would you be?
I would be the wind.
Mm.
I I've got a bit of a love affair with the wind. I'm not entirely sure where it comes from, but I think it's probably why I studied meteorology. But whenever I'm, especially when I'm by the coast, when I'm by the sea, you know, just the being in the wind and seeing the playfulness also of the wind, the playfulness, but also the power and the freedom. You know, you can't control the wind. You can try to control water even, but the wind you can't control. So I think I choose to be the wind.
Thank you. And thank you for, yeah, it's difficult for me to summarize, but you opened many doors for me today. And I think the one that I really needed to be reminded of is that we cannot control everything.
Yeah, it's a truth, but it's an uncomfortable truth. Mm. So, but yes, it was a lot of fun chatting to you. Yeah. Thank you again for inviting me.
That's a pleasure. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. I'd be honored if you'd subscribe to this podcast series. And if you found this episode meaningful, please share it with someone you care about. Go to my website, www.marietsneeman.co.za, for this episode's podcast notes and for free podcasts and articles on how to live a happier and healthier life and have more fulfilling relationships. To follow me on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn, just search for Mariette Sneeman Journalist. The podcast series Calm, Clear and Helpful is produced by me with original music by Mart Marie Sneeman. Catch you next Tuesday at 9:00.